This is 90.7 FM WGXC Accra, Hudson, Catskill, the station that everyone loves.
Unhappy about something you heard on All Together Now? Or maybe you have a strong opinion about an issue. Energy, agriculture, the environment, the Common Core standards, or broadband access. Don't keep it to yourself. Call 518-291-9492 and leave a 3-minute message, and we'll play it on the air. Leave a 3-minute message, 518-291-9492, with your take for all you hear. Again, that number is 518-291-9492 to leave a 3-minute message that may be played on All Together Now. Thanks for getting involved in your local community.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Mid-Hudson Cable, serving Columbia, Greene, and Southern Albany counties with digital cable, high-speed internet, and cable phone services for homes and businesses since 1971. Mid-Hudson Cable. All the right connections on the web at mhcable.com.
Hello, and welcome to Roots Runners Rhizomes, radical health and healing from the underground. I'm Sarah Faulkner, and beloved co-host Lauren Jambroni is traveling today. She's on the road. So it's just me in the studio with two folks. Well, one of whom is here. The other should be joining us shortly. We're going to be talking with, well, Audrey Berman is here. We're going to be talking about Rolling Grocer 19. So a new project. That's, did you guys, was your first opening this past Wednesday?
Yes, it was.
Awesome. Okay. So we're waiting for Cece because she'll be coming along very shortly. Mm-hmm. But maybe just to start us off, Audrey, why don't you, can you introduce yourself to our listeners and tell us a little bit about yourself?
Okay.
And, yeah.
Yeah. My name's Audrey Berman, and I've been living in the Valley for about 6 years. Prior to my work with Rolling Grocer, I was working on farms for about 3 years in both Columbia and Dutchess County, apprenticing and managing, working towards a career in agriculture, which didn't seem possible after those 3 years. Fortunately, there's a lot of challenges to getting a farm up and running today. So instead, I pivoted towards food access work and the nonprofit sector. So I started Long Table Harvest, which is one of the collaborators of the Rolling Grocer.
Mm-hmm. Long Table Harvest a... Is it a registered nonprofit, or what's the status of that project?
We're fiscally sponsored by Hawthorne Valley Association, so we get to receive nonprofit donations through their 501c3 status.
Awesome.
So we're in our third year of operation. We started off doing a gleaning program.
You want to describe what that is?
Yeah. We work with about 40 farms in both Columbia and Dutchess counties, picking up any of their surplus produce that they have at the end of the week, and then distributing that out directly to food pantries and a lot of after-school programs, other nonprofits, senior living centers, anyone who approaches us and wants access to that produce and is in need, we say yes.
Awesome. Yeah. And when you say excess produce, what's up with that?
Yeah. So there's a few reasons that there is surplus on farm. One is... it's the farmer's insurance policy. So they plant 15 to 20% more than they need in case of inclement weather or pests and disease. They have to ensure that they have enough to meet their market demand. And then because those crops are so perishable and markets are unpredictable, it's really hard to know if you are harvesting in just enough for your sales outlet. So there's usually something left over, and we get to pick that up.
maybe talk a little closer okay. Sorry to your about mic. That. Sorry about yeah. that. Sorry if we were so quiet, listeners. I hope you can hear us now. Yeah. I just noticed. I've been looking at Audrey and not looking at the dial on the audio here. Sorry to interrupt.
No worries.
Awesome. So Long Table Harvest. So one of Long Table Harvest's projects yes. is sponsoring Rolling Grocer.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about how Rolling Grocer, where that idea came from. Yeah. And
absolutely.
Yeah.
Over 2 years ago now, maybe creeping up on 2.5, Hawthorne Valley Association and Long Table Harvest put in a grant through the Berkshire Taconic Foundation. They had opened up an RFP for, it's called the Fresh and Healthy Food for All Initiative in Columbia County.
RFP is Request for Proposals.
Proposal, yeah. Yep. Sorry,
I like to always unpack sure, no, acronyms for listeners.
That's yeah. great. Yeah. yeah. Being in the industry, it's, you know.
You sound really cool, but and now our listeners can too,
yeah,
right?
Great. So we submitted that RFP a couple years ago and were awarded it. And it was a multi-pronged approach towards trying to understand the food landscape in Columbia County and then work with community members to come towards some opportunities that were available. And so initially we put together a core group of Hudson residents, reaching out to other nonprofits and after school programs and just people that we knew mm-hmm. to see who's into food, who mm-hmm. cares, who wants to be a part of this. So we met monthly and facilitated those conversations to really do the research and understand what this food situation looks like now, but has in the past looked like. And then work from there to really understand what the needs are.
So what are the needs of our area? What did you determine?
Yeah. Well, so food, a.k.a. a grocery store, was kind of the gaping hole that we all knew was a big need. But we realized that actually starting a store, a brick and mortar store, was going to be really tough. So we considered some other options. And so initially we started off, seafood ended up being this really huge need that people were saying that they wanted and sort of spanned across all demographics and spectrum of people in Hudson. So focus specifically on Hudson to start. So we started off with that, doing the seafood buying club two times a month. We had someone, Amy Lawton, managing that project where you could buy seafood on a sliding scale. So similar to this pricing system that we're using on the Grocer, it's three tiers based on your financial ability. You pay according to what you can.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a trial that we ran for a year, offering fresh seafood and seeing how this pricing model worked in the community.
And that seafood buying club, folks would put in an order and then pick up what they ordered
a couple days later.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so you started off with the seafood buying club, but obviously folks cannot live on fish alone.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, while that was happening, we were then working on all of the logistics of how to actually start a mobile store. And that was the primary goal that we were really working towards. And that came from that community group saying, you know, we need a store and a mobile store to actually get to seniors, get to people without vehicles, mm-hmm. just really make its way all around town. Because mm-hmm. even though it's a relatively small city, it's not the most accessible even within the city limits.
Right.
So having something that like actually could come to the people, especially those who are elderly or homebound.
Right. And public transportation is another big need in the Hudson area, which I know some people are starting to do some great work right. on. But, you know, until that's really going, yeah. you know, because in many communities, people might take a bus or
sure.
to with ease. But that's yeah. not necessarily the case yet yeah. in Hudson.
Yeah.
So hence a mobile market. And now we can Yay. Welcome Cece and Carmen, the youngest guest we've had yet on Roots Runners Rhizomes. Welcome to the show.
Good afternoon, everybody.
How are you doing?
Oh, my goodness. It's my day off and it's madness.
Oh, my gosh. Thanks so much for coming on in here.
No, it's a pleasure.
Oh, so Audrey's already introduced herself. You want to tell our listeners who you are and a little bit about how you came to this project and anything you want to share with us about
sure. So I'm a mom of seven, from 21 all the way to 11 months.
You want to say your full name?
Celia Graham, but everyone knows me as Cece. Yeah. I used to have the wash and fold service and laundromat on State Street, and we closed that in 2015 and opened up the wash and fold and U-Haul at 40 Green Street from 2015 till July of this year. And I guess I've been on committees and boards throughout Hudson, because as a resident of Hudson, you can't just live here. You have to, if you want to be here, I think the best way to be here is to be involved, and to be involved in movements that circle around things that affect you and people that you care about, or even just your neighbors. Housing is one of those things, transportation. And of course, food is like something that's, I can't say it trumps housing, but it's like, until you're fed, you can't think about anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what this is all about, is this food movement is about food justice. Mm-hmm. So that was crucial. Audrey, the Bruno sisters, Kaya, a lot of people pulled me in on the project, and I appreciate all of their thoughts thinking of me, because I wasn't thinking of me at the time. I didn't even know this was going on. I mean, everyone wanted it, right?
Right.
I mean, I remember talking with Audrey and saying, yeah, I was just going to buy a school bus and just like put food in it.
Cece had the idea early on. Yeah.
Awesome. So I think Audrey was telling us a little bit about the background of
the core group.
Who else is involved besides you two?
So the core group is the Bruno sisters, Wendy and Shannon Keneally, Arlen Medina, Juan Sanchez, Kaya Payton.
Mm-hmm.
And Jabin
and Muhammad.
Yes. And then we've got a few folks from Hawthorne Valley working with us.
Uh-huh.
Rachel and Stefan Schneider, Brigham Scharf, and Stephanie Lazar.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So what's the timeline on this? When did you really start? Because you've just had, how many times has the Rolling Grocer been in operation this week? Twice?
Four days.
Yeah.
Wednesday to Saturday.
Yeah. Awesome. So, I don't even know where to start. So first of all, tell us what it looks like and feels like. You're at designated places on a regular basis.
Yes.
And you have a rolling day. You want to talk about sort of the schedule and then what folks will find when they come to the Rolling Grocer?
Sure.
Yeah. Wednesdays is our ground break day. We're at Bliss Towers, and that meets the needs of two of our core demographics, which is the elderly population and the underserved or marginalized or income unstable community, which is not to say that that's not everyone at some point in time, but in that area we find the most, and it's also the most diverse too. You have a large demographic of Black, Latino, Haitian, Guatemalan, Bangladesh. It's a large community of people down there. So we serve Providence Hall and Bliss Towers on Wednesdays.
Mm-hmm.
Thursdays was our rolling day. And I'll let Audrey tell you how we got to where we are on Thursdays.
Yeah. Well,
What's up with Thursdays?
So Thursdays was meant to be our rolling day. We met up at our home base, which is on North 2nd Street, where the trailer's parked.
Uh-huh.
And we were like, okay, let's just roll down Warren and see where we can find some spots. And luckily, there was a good area of three plus spots that were open for us. And it took us a little while, but we finally got the trailer in there and then noticed across the street, the old police department has their, the curb is painted yellow. So no one actually ever parks there. And so I spoke to someone at the current police department about using that weekly. So we have approval right now. And then hopefully we're going to get some more permanent signage around that. And yeah, but we'll be on the 400 block.
On Thursdays.
Oh, yeah.
That's excellent. That's really excellent. And then what are your other days of operation?
Friday, we are at the hospital,
mm-hmm.
Columbia Memorial, right in the valet parking area, that kind of front area where you would pull in with the main entrance. And then Saturdays in the morning, we're on Front Street between Columbia and State. And then in the afternoon, we're at the library.
Oh, great. So Saturday's a split day.
Yeah.
Nice. Nice. And what hours in general are you?
Wednesday through Friday, 3 to 7 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
Saturday is 10 to about 1 on front, and then 1:30 to 4 at the library.
That's great.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit, tell our listeners, maybe we'll start with, you've continued this three-tiered pricing system. Mm-hmm. Can you tell people how you arrived at that and how that works?
Sure. Yeah, that took at least a year of going back and forth to really figure out what's the best way to kind of build upon a sliding scale model, which I've seen in various different places and mm-hmm. did some research about and personally have taken advantage of and really enjoyed, but have also noticed that on farms that I was working at that took sliding scale for their CSA, actually coming across people who weren't necessarily being truthful or even conceptualizing their true financial picture relative to other people. Mm-hmm. And so mm-hmm. just having that kind of loosey-goosey, like pay whatever you think you deserve to pay, just didn't sit right with us.
I will butt in too and notice, you know, I do sliding scale fees myself as a massage therapist, and probably about 15 years ago, I was pretty loosey-goosey myself. Yeah. And then I had a watershed moment where someone who had always kind of explained to me that she was lower income and, you know, really needed a break, I found out she earned twice annually what I did. And she had a job with like benefits and paid vacation and all that. So I was like, oh my gosh, you know, so I started my, you know, and I think in the healthcare industry, we've had folks from Third Root Community Health on here before, and mm-hmm. they have some similar to concretize it for people because we might have, you know, a self-image that really is highly variable.
And I think I looked actually at the literature that Third Root had put out there. So,
yeah, it's very concrete. And also, I like having also the notion, so many people have sliding scale and it just sort of starts and then it goes low. But the trend of having a higher price for people who are, you know, for whatever reason, prosperous, abundant themselves and have extra money can help subsidize other folks. It's another way they can give back to the community. It's important.
Yeah. So we have these three tiers, and the lowest one actually starts above the federal poverty minimums. We don't necessarily believe that that actually accommodates the full spectrum of challenges that people face. And so wanting to start that above what the government is dictating as, you know, qualifying you for Medicaid or EBT or what have you, that was too low. So we started a bit higher.
Mm-hmm. Are you able to accept SNAP and EBT benefits?
Very soon.
Okay, great.
We have an inspection on Thursday.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So if all goes well. Yeah. Cool. Absolutely. And FMNP checks will also be accepted soon.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Great.
And just so you know, those FMNP checks are for WIC participants as well as seniors. It's a dual program. Yeah.
That's great. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got the three tiers.
Yeah. And so.
And so let's say a person comes for the first time.
Right.
What's their experience like with we have getting set up with this?
We have a laminated sheet that I don't have today, but they would start by identifying how many people are in their household, and then that would correlate with a combined household income. And there's three kind of brackets that falls into, and that would equate with a color, blue, orange, or green. So all of our prices are listed with three prices, and that's color-coded to kind of simplify when you're shopping. You just, you know, if you're blue, you look at all the blue colors to see your pricing. But even that we realize does not accommodate for the full financial picture of a person today. Mm-hmm. And so there's some other criteria at the bottom that you could then, if you were questioning, you know, am I actually orange? Am I green? You know, what am I? You could look at those, and that kind of further clarifies, you know, if you are able to travel recreationally or can rely on family in times of need, or have investments or equity, you know, maybe you want to consider shopping on the higher end, even though what you're taking in on a day-to-day basis might be a little bit lower. And then on the other hand, if you are a senior or have a lot of student debt or all these other factors that, you know, might allow you to shop at a more subsidized rate. And the idea is that we're selling on our lowest tier, our blue tier, at wholesale prices or sometimes even below that. And on the highest end, it's retail. And then in the middle is somewhere in the middle. So we're really trying our best to kind of have that be this internal mechanism that begins to sustain itself. So in terms of our fundraising, we don't have to also fundraise to purchase food, that the food costs begin to cover themselves, and we're fundraising for labor and other operating expenses.
Awesome.
The goal would be to actually make a profit on that, but it's really hard to know because, as far as I know, nothing like this has been done before in this way. And
wow.
So we'll see how much we actually make. And a lot of that is dependent on who's shopping there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's balanced out
mm-hmm.
between the different tiers or not. So.
Yeah, back in the day, I was a member of a CSA in Brooklyn that was, I think, the first tiered model of CSA. Mm-hmm. It was co-sponsored by Just Food.
Okay, yeah.
And they did the same thing where the top tier helped subsidize their, and they had even some no-cost shares
right.
in the CSA. But I haven't kept up with, like, if it's still going
yeah.
and how they worked that. Are you... doing a blog or keeping track sort of how that's all going to work
yeah.
out? Like,
we have all the data. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're collecting that as we speak, but I think it'll take a little while to evaluate. I know we had 100 people sign up
uh-huh.
over this past week.
Wow.
In operation. Yeah. So we'll input those into the system and have our first, you know, set of numbers around what that percentage breakdown is.
So when people sign up, just trying to get an idea for folks who might want to come
sure.
shop, does that take, how much time does that take the first time you shop and then you're good to go
yeah.
in the future?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We just explain we show you the laminated sheet with the breakdown
uh-huh.
and then you fill out 5 lines of information and then you're done.
Wow.
So yeah, we put it
pretty
in the
easy.
System and then we don't have to do it again. And your account number is your phone number. So when you shop with us, you just tell us what your phone number is.
Device picks up, we can pick up.
Oh, awesome.
And also just so people know, the income portion of the tiered pricing is self-identifying. So
right.
we don't ask you, are you sure you make 40,000? We just ask you for a color.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Whether that color uh-huh. falls within the 25 or 40 is up to, you know, your discretion. So yeah, it's really self-reporting, and we're not asking anyone's business, you know.
Yeah,
and it
yeah.
doesn't go any further than our constituents, and just for our purposes of trying to keep this going and be able to create grants around these,
yeah.
because that's important too. That data is really important for that.
Yeah, that's great. And it also reminds me too of sometimes when we're doing social justice work, at the beginning of a workshop, we might do an exercise that helps us gently just determine really where we're at generally in terms of the privileges and oppressions
yeah.
that we live with
right.
in our society. You know, there's a kind of a famous exercise where everyone begins standing in a line and people take, you know,
right.
do you have investments, take one step forward, and you know
wow.
do you, and this kind of thing. And this is I enjoy also because this is another tool that people have kind of reminding, oh
yeah,
you know, here's where I'm at compared to other people, maybe I can try a little harder or cut myself some slack
right.
I, you know,
absolutely,
either way, right?
Yeah, that's beautiful. We did that same model with Susan Snyder in Oral Histories.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
For the survivors of genocide and stuff.
Yeah.
And we kind of just put like the top 5 things that you have
uh-huh.
that you may not like identify that someone else might not have. So someone might
yeah.
put up family, a passport.
Right.
You know, so you put
exactly.
up those 5 things, keys to a car, and then slowly have someone just randomly take away one.
Yeah.
For you to realize how, you know, how important it is and how significant it is to have things that are not as tangible as we, you know, just really important things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So tell our listeners what kinds of food they can find in Rolling Grocer. And I just want to do a little, we're listening to Roots Runners Rhizomes, Radical Health and Healing from the Underground. And on the air with me today are Audrey and Cece from Rolling Grocer 19. It's Rolling Grocer 19.
Yeah.
Right?
Correct.
What's the 19 for?
So the 19 is not for the congressional district.
Common mistake.
I know. I was like, wait
but
a minute.
A welcomed one. People are like, oh, for the 19th district. So smart. So there are 19 parishes. No, towns.
Yes.
There are 19 towns in Columbia County. And that 19 represents each one of those towns, which ideally, not utopically, ideally is where we want to reach out to further constituents. Hudson is the seat of Columbia County. So
mm-hmm.
we
mm-hmm.
have to start here, you
mm-hmm.
know. It makes sense.
So by next year, there's going to be a fleet of Rolling Grocers in all 19 towns. That's right.
From your mouth to God's lips, you know, or to the grant writer's lips.
But of course, I'm going to support you in your self-care and wellness. Yeah. So you'll do that with ease and right. abundance.
I thought it was cute. Nicholas stopped by on 4.
Oh, yeah.
Did he tell you?
Me, yeah, yeah.
He goes, so the reported income, is this gross or net? only a self-employed person makes that decision.
I thought
it was classic.
I know. Yeah. Yeah, he thought it was a great, he really loved it. But I'm not going to describe what he told me. I want you guys to tell me. So what kinds of stuff can people expect to find?
So a typical supermarket has a variable of, what do you call those? Lanes.
Staples?
Lanes. Oh, lanes. And staples. We provide, if not all, most of those staples minus prescriptions, which soon maybe we can get those. Maybe Lauren will come on with some of her medicinal stuff. So we have local bread. We have local dairy.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the main two local things that I find that people tend to not look for locally, which are huge. I mean, mm-hmm. people used to make bread in their home, right?
Right.
And yogurt. So our butter, our milk, cheese. All the dairy, mm-hmm. we have fish, salmon and shrimp. We have chicken parts. We have beef, pork. We have bacon.
That just got you 10 new subscribers right there.
We have produce, and our produce is not limited to this area.
Uh-huh. So you have bananas.
We have more than bananas.
Oh my gosh, hot seller.
It is. It's a number one seller.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have coffee, free trade.
Yay.
We have cereal. We have canned goods as well as bulk dry goods. And the concept around bulk, I know it's a European concept, and maybe some who shop at the co-ops know what this mm-hmm. is all about. You bring a container. We don't necessarily have the container part. What we have is we've bought in large quantities and bulked it down to mm-hmm. 2 pounds, 1 pound, 5 pound.
Oh, so nice.
To save money for the consumer as well as us. I mean, packaging isn't a cheap endeavor.
Yeah.
And we all can agree that the plastic and all those other things that come in packaging is really killing the environment. So just to reduce that a little bit. And I think it looks really attractive too. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, we're lovingly repackaging this bulk product for all of you.
Lovingly. I lost 2 pounds repackaging.
It's the last hottest week, and it was kind of intense. Yeah. Also, we've got some spices that we're also buying in bulk and packing down as well. So kind of really trying to cover the whole spectrum of food needs, but focusing on those really basic staples mm-hmm. that you just need to have in your kitchen and, mm-hmm. and accommodating for the diversity of food ways also that exist in Hudson mm-hmm. and the people who live here.
Yeah. We also have household items as toiletries, and we also have feminine products because that struggle is real as well.
Yeah.
Accessibility for
that's
that.
That's a staple.
It's not easy, and it's sometimes not always convenient or comfortable. So we have that.
That's great. How about diapers?
Well, the issue with diapers is that there's more than one size.
We're a tiny store.
Yeah.
Just wondering.
Yeah, yeah. We're taking suggestions, though. We have a little board up on your way out. If there's something that you want to have, you write it down and we'll see if we can get it.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So how do you decide which producers to work with? Is there a system for that? I know you're trying to focus on getting as much as possible locally, but tell us a little bit about that.
Mostly for the fresh product that's in season, we will get locally when we can.
Mm-hmm.
And we're working with a handful of producers right now.
Do you want to say who any of your local producers are?
Farm at Miller's Crossing, uh-huh. Sparrowbush Farm, Ironwood Farm, Northwind Farm for our meat. We get our honey from Bee Hollow Farm and Apiary. And I think Love Apple Farm for fruit, and Hawthorne Valley Farm for dairy, and also some bread.
So, awesome.
Yeah. And then we're also featuring some fermented products like Poor Devil hot sauce and Hawthorne Valley ferments as well.
Which is locally produced.
Yeah, that's great.
So, and then the rest of the bulk stuff comes through UNFI, which because we're housed under Hawthorne Valley Association, we get to buy through the farm store. And the farm store has an account with UNFI, gets really great discounts, and they're passing that on to us.
So UNFI, for our listeners, is a big distributor, a wholesale distributor.
Yeah, focusing on predominantly organic or majority organic products.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. And you carry some produce that's not organic or just
out of season or not local. So Albert's Organics is a big distributor that we use for that. So we have bananas, lemons, limes, mangoes, plantains, avocados.
Yeah. Two types of avocado.
I'm glad to hear that. Yeah. I love avocados. Yeah.
And with our Hudson Core group over that, the 2 years that we met, we did a lot of research around, we had sent out surveys into the community and really tried to find out what are the basics that people want. And so it was really culled from, that information was culled from the community and is pretty representative, I think, of what people want. And we see that through what is kind of going off the shelves.
It's, I know it's only been a few times that you've been open, but so what are people, what are people buying this week? It's fall. The weather's changed. Bananas. Always bananas.
And the curry. I find the curry was a popular staple.
Really?
I would say maybe one in every five bags had a bag of curry going through the door. It was crazy. But it was good. I mean, you know, why not? Curry's great.
Curry is great.
Mm-hmm. And yogurt, the maple yogurt from Hawthorne Valley was a hit.
Yeah.
The sausages, we have three types. Chorizo, the sweet, the hot. That was a real popular buy.
Are those from, who are those from?
Northwind.
And the chicken feet. As a, you mentioned to make soup. That's right.
Yeah, that's right. That's great. How are you getting the word out there to residents? What are your outreach?
This is one. We've done this quite a few times now. Audrey and I together and as well as separately trying to hit the areas. And it's interesting to find that people relate. And when they find us now, they're saying, oh, I heard you on the radio.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great.
Register Star has been helpful. Pro Printers has printed a lot of our materials. So we've been distributing locally on foot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Red the old town, ways.
Yeah.
I share you on social media for people who still can deal with being on social media.
Yeah. We've got an Instagram and Facebook account. We have a website.
Twitter too.
Well, since Roots Runners Rhizomes is all about health and wellness, you want to talk a little bit about sort of nutrition and health and what you hope to do with this project for sort of the wellness and health of our community? Was that a part of part of your thinking?
Well, you know, health and wellness is tied to nutrition, like intrinsically. I saw that this weekend. Audrey wasn't able to, but I saw at the library during our 1:30 to 4 slot, Brigham Sheriff did a food demo. And it was really for, it was geared towards the children. We called it a rainbow bowl rice bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I said that to my 12-year-old, he goes, I'm just going to add food coloring to the rice. And I'm like, I didn't even think about that, but I was like, oh. So Brigham kind of broke it down. And we're going to use the rice from the truck. We're going to use as much vegetables as we can. And we're going to create this whole fabulous rice bowl. And I couldn't picture it, but I got to tell you, we had the table. You couldn't see the table at one point. There were just people, families, everyone got involved. We had beans, we had collards, we had this amazing butternut squash that she made.
And who was this that did the demo?
Brigham Sheriff. She's the educator for the Rolling Grocer 19, and she did the food demo and got the kids involved too, cutting up things and putting things together to kind of make it. We had beets. We had just so much stuff. We had the avocados. We had so much stuff in those bowls that my son goes, was there any meat? and I'm like, no. He says, why do I feel so full? I was like, that's the concept, is that you don't always need that burger or that chicken to feel. Not that we're against that. I'm just, you know, it's just to widen your horizon a little bit. And I think the food being out and doing those kind of things changes the views. He brought about 6 or 7 friends out locally.
Wow.
And they all ate and they all were satisfied. I mean, I was so surprised. The only thing they wanted was a beverage when it was all said and done.
So Brigham did a demo, and did people kind of come away from that also maybe knowing how to make, you know, what she demonstrated?
Yeah, the rainbow rice bowl. She had ingredients. She had an actual recipe on the side, which I think there was maybe 3 copies left. I think she made a copy of 20.
Wow, that's great.
I mean, I even took one because her collards were amazing.
What'd she put in them?
She said she just used a lot of olive oil and onions and some seasonings, but it just tasted like she put her foot in it. I don't know. It was really good. I don't know if you know that term, but when someone puts their foot in something, they gave it their all.
I do like a lot of olive oil on my collard greens for sure. And mine always have onions and garlic in them.
She had all that in there as well.
So do you have plans for more demos in other dates and locations too?
Brigham would speak to that, but I think the idea is to maybe once a month while the weather permits.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
That's great.
Absolutely. Yeah. Just continuing that. We don't have anything finite yet, but that's the plan.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, again, you know, the CSA model at which I've, you know, been either a member or a volunteer for CSAs for, I don't know, like 20 years now. Yeah. you know, a lot of times folks are meeting vegetables. They are meeting vegetables that they've never encountered before, right, or didn't grow up or just don't know how to, you know, cook, but they're excited. But some education is often helpful. Hey, high five me. So it's great that you have someone on board who can specifically sort of broaden people's horizons. And, you know, I think just about everybody agrees that diversity in what you eat is also good for us. Mm-hmm. You know, diversity in every facet of our lives is good. And so broadening our horizons to new things that we've never cooked before, that's really great. That, do you have, does she make any recipes or anything just to have on hand at the market? Or do you have like a little bulletin board or anything like that?
We have a bulletin board. We're not there yet.
I know. You guys, when I say things like that, I'm like, don't feel the pressure.
Yeah, no,
it's amazing. You guys got this up and running. Yeah. It's so amazing.
Yeah, we totally see the necessity for having a more holistic approach to what we do. And so it's not just a grocery store, but, you know, it's a community meeting space, and it is a place to learn about how to prepare food or understand about social justice when you're actually looking at this fair pricing index and maybe having an understanding of that, like what you thought your situation was financially isn't necessarily as dire as maybe what other people are experiencing. So I hope that it's a multifaceted space that can really reach people on different levels. In addition just to providing a really basic service of affordable food.
And also something that is important to me and that sometimes not everyone makes the connection with. So you're providing a great service for your customers.
Yeah.
But also, if this thing takes off, you know, a lot of folks in Columbia County will talk about, oh, there's no jobs here. It's, you know, employment. And in other parts of the United States and also in Europe, you know, what you guys are doing, your project's super special, but what in other parts of the country and in Europe, there's much more developed short distance supply chains, right? Yeah. And what you're doing, this local produce from local farmers it's amazing, because if you can build on this model, it's going to provide employment for people in so many kinds of ways. You know, some people I'll talk to and they're like, oh, there's no jobs here. And I'm like, well, farming is an industry here. And they're like, well, I don't, you know, they think I mean go pull up some turnips or something. No, I mean, you know, what you guys are doing is agricultural related and, you know, distribution, transport, all those things are excellent jobs for people in the area.
Yeah. Yeah, and working towards our long-term vision, which is actually to have a community food hub in the city of Hudson, would provide a ton of jobs. And
you want to talk about what a community food hub is? That would be great.
Yeah, I mean, it's very much in the visioning stages, although we were awarded a grant through the Downtown Revitalization Initiative, our first grant funding, but we need a significant amount more to make that come to fruition. But basically it's a facility that has coolers and freezers and dry storage and a retail outlet and offices.
Mm-hmm. Kitchen.
Yeah. Like a community kitchen.
Yeah.
That people can use.
It would be multi-purpose. So like for prepared foods, but also people could potentially rent out and use.
Mm-hmm. To start up a business.
Yeah. You know. The idea is basically we run aggregation and distribution from local farms out of this hub, and then that food could get sent out to larger industrial, more like corporate accounts like the hospital or the school district. Yeah.
Or supermarkets even, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like if you go to California, for example, like you go to like a chain supermarket, a national chain supermarket, but a lot of their produce is from local producers because they have food hubs, right? Yeah.
Yeah, and the issue here is that we have mostly small and mid-sized farms, so they're not producing at a scale where they are able to either provide the quantity minimums for selling at a large retailer like that, or have the financial wherewithal to actually get the certifications needed to get into those kinds of markets. So we could potentially provide those services, but then also be aggregating. So let's say we're getting carrots from three different farms, then that makes our order big enough to sell to a hospital. And those jobs, you know, are picking and packing and delivering, and, you know, they are necessary jobs. They're not necessarily, you know, high wage positions, but there will be jobs that come out of that.
And management too, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. The idea is then to have a retail arm there. So
at the community hub.
And do a lot of prepared foods. So working with Long Table to then supply either seconds produce or work with farmers to actually pay for their seconds product to create affordable meals, kind of grab and go.
And you said you got some grant money towards this, but you're still seeking. So what's the fundraising looking like? Like what are your thoughts about that?
It's still, I feel like we're still very much in the nascent stages of this project, but the first round of funding we got needs to go towards the acquisition of a facility and also start the distribution and aggregation piece. So I threw out a lot of components of that project out there, but they're not going to all roll out at once. It's going to kind of happen, you know, piece by piece until we can get it going. But it would be a not-for-profit, likely tied to some for-profit. So a combination of revenue streams and
Cool. So when do you think you might sort of step back and take a look at how it's going and tweak things? You kind of started your season now. Do you have a process in place for how you're going to take into account like suggestions or what's working, what's not working?
I mean, we meet weekly.
Oh, wow.
So it's a constant process. Right now, we're just trying to get our bearings straight and have our processes and just our schedule really clear and part of our intuition at that point where we're rolling and not having to constantly check in on our, on the spreadsheets or whatever it is that we're using to organize ourselves. So I think once we get our footing, then we'll really start to, I mean, we'll also be looking at the numbers while all that's happening. So I think it's going to just happen as we go, but then evaluating every few months, really the broader kind of success or challenges within the project.
What have been some of the, you can choose which, if either you want to talk about, want to hear about any challenges or surprises or exciting surprises that you've had as during this process, anything come up for you where you're like, wow, that was awesome. Or, wow, that kind of sucked.
Well, I think the suggestion board that we have in the trailer was a surprise to actually see people utilize it and, you know, like go back and utilize it. And we have a little donation jar and that was like filled by Saturday, which was amazing.
Awesome.
Thank you, Hudson. That was amazing. And everybody did it. Not everyone who donated actually purchased. So it was more about believing in the movement and just not wanting us to leave. Mm-hmm. You know, that was a huge piece. People already asking, do we do delivery?
Amazing. Is that in the horizon for you?
That's something we would consider after a year of running to see if it makes sense to do delivery more, I guess, to homebound residents or people who can't come out. On the challenge front, I would say the thing that I'm bumping my head against is the fact that we are literally a mobile store. And product moves when you drive. And we've got glass bottles of oil and sauce. And so really figuring out, you know, how do we stabilize everything?
Yeah.
And part of it is making sure we're fully stocked. So product is, you know, tight. But then there's some other things that I've had to kind
spilled
of
some hot sauce jury along rig. The way there.
So that's been an interesting challenge. And also the perishability of the food that we're dealing with, all of the fresh product, just it only lasts for so long. And just because we're starting, you know, people this week didn't necessarily think to plan around shopping fully with us, you know, and I think that's going to change over time. But it's coordinating the logistics of getting product from farm based on their harvest schedules mm-hmm. and our schedules mm-hmm. and really having yeah. that kind of lineup so that we can offer really fresh product to you all the time. But it is a work in progress to figure that out.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Let's get back to the notion of food justice and talk a little bit more about that. And maybe we can contextualize Rolling Grocer 19 sort of in the larger history of food justice and how important that is. Maybe if you want to talk a little bit about any other models that sort of have been important to you, or it doesn't even have to be a model for your project, but just ways that you feel that getting food to people has been a really radical and important thing. You know, I mean, I'm thinking a lot of middle-class Americans maybe don't realize that there were no subsidized or free lunches and breakfast programs in schools until the Black Panthers mm-hmm. offered these programs in right. urban areas. Right. And I myself, as a school girl, I got free breakfast and lunch from my school. Mm-hmm. But that was started not by the government right. or the school. It was started by activists and revolutionaries. Yeah. So maybe you want to, do you have anything else to say about the power of food?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm personally most inspired when that comes from the community.
Mm-hmm.
I deal with, when I initially started Long Table Harvest and was doing my gleaning program and went to conferences and had met other gleaners and other food banks who are trying to get involved in mitigating food waste and doing that through the redistribution of surplus food. I kept bumping up against it not being necessarily the right way to approach food justice or food access, where you're trying to take a waste stream and then feed that to people. And sometimes it can be really good, for example, if it does come from a farm, but you have multinational corporations who have a surplus of cookies or some highly processed product that they can then dump off on a food bank and get a write-off, and now they're sitting pretty, but then now all these pantries are offloading really crappy food on people.
Yeah, I grew up eating that like Velveeta like government cheese yeah. and you'd go stand in line for your government cheese.
Yeah.
That was not so good for our health.
Yeah. And there's a lot of trends in philanthropy and in the food movement around replicability or starting a project and can you duplicate it somewhere else? And the more and more that I'm involved in this place is I understand that it's the work that I do is so tied to the intricacies and the specificities of the people and the landscape. And Columbia County is an abundant agricultural community, which is unlike many other counties in this mm-hmm. state or in the country. And so this expectation that solutions should be replicable or should be just dropped in somewhere else and can
standardized.
Yeah. And can, yeah. And make changes there. I'm continually a little bit frustrated with that. And so I think, we did spend 2 years working with people who have lived in Hudson either their whole lives or for a large part of their life. I am not from Hudson. So for me, it was very important to have those voices be centered in this process
mm-hmm.
And really like heed to the knowledge of those folks, CC being one of them, and bringing in whatever expertise I might have to support that. And so really collaborating to work together is just, for me, I'm inspired by projects where it's multifaceted and there's a lot of different people involved and the voices of the community that are being served are centered in that process.
Mm. Yeah, and shout out to all the farmers who all through Hudson. I moved here in 94 mm-hmm. and I saw farmers bringing food in on the back of trucks and selling because they knew that those people couldn't get to the farm stands.
Mm-hmm.
And so realizing that there was an access issue like early on,
mm-hmm.
but for me realizing that those people didn't let that stop them, those farmers didn't let that stop them. They brought the food to the people. I mean, even in Puerto Rico and places like in the Caribbean where they have bodegas,
mm-hmm.
it's not necessarily a corner store. Bodega actually is a big carted wheel with food and produce on it, which would go from town to town and mm-hmm. vicinity to vicinity selling their wares. Even the sharpening of the knife and mm-hmm. the peanut man, everyone did it. So mm-hmm. it's the mobile concept is something that's intrinsic in everyone, is trying to reach the needs of people. Mm-hmm. I think we got away from that a little bit, longer than a little bit, for a long time, mm-hmm. especially when the communities become segregated. Mm-hmm. You tend to find people who can just go out and get, you know, go to Trader Joe's or Whole Foods, where some can't even get to ShopRite, which is only 2 miles up the road. Mm-hmm. So for us, when we were talking about this in our the core group.
Yeah.
Everyone recognizing that there was something like that in their lives, even the local church mm-hmm. giving out food or having meals prepared, the Salvation Armies, mm-hmm. they realized too that they have to bring it within the communities. You can't necessarily just say, we're going to put this on Fairview. You'll know where to find us. Mm. That's not realistic. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a model. It's there. It's mm-hmm. everywhere. But is it realistic? Is it working for everyone? Mm-hmm. There's some people that have never even been into a ShopRite because they can't get there. Mm-hmm. We were at the hospital on Friday and talked to the social worker there, who was saying that times they can't let a person go home because there's no one to go home to and there's no one to help them with the shopping. Mm. And I'm like, that's crazy. This is food.
Yeah.
There's got to be a way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So this mobile market is touching on many lives and it's helping and formalizing hope in a lot of ways where people thought it was really dire, you know, even where they have to leave the area because they just can't access everything. Yeah. That's the saddest. I think when I was doing U-Haul and I saw that on a large scale, not just local people, but people who moved up from Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. When you move up to New York City, your idea is you can get to anything by walking. Mm-hmm. But when you realize the actual distance, like the mental distance,
yeah,
you know, it's just hard.
Yeah.
So this is close to home for me. This whole model and the concept and being out there and seeing the people and getting the emotions, you know, just having people just come on and say, thank you so much.
Incredible.
And they're spending money. We're not giving anything away for free.
Yeah. Right, you know? Right, right. Yeah.
You know, so it's like they're thanking us and then they're paying for the produce and the, you know, the grains and the chicken. And it's just like, wow, you know, I mean, I've only heard that in ShopRite when people are bagging the groceries for someone. It's like, thanks for bagging.
Right.
You know, and that's about it. But to actually say, as soon as you get on, thank you for coming. Thank you for being here. Mm. I knew you were coming. I waited. Seeing people walk from Fifth Street. I saw someone walking from Fifth Street. The bag was orange. It was pretty bright. And like when he got to the trailer, he kind of was like, I made it, you know.
Oh, that's great.
You know, on a Saturday afternoon, it was like really warming. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. And people are hungry, not just for food, but for the community aspect, too. Yeah. And, you know, and when you go to maybe a big chain store or buy things online and this kind of thing, we miss out on a lot of things that humans have been, you know, buying and selling things to each other or trading for millennia, right? And there's a pleasure to that, and there's a pleasure to interacting with people who are involved with what they made. And mm-hmm. and you know, also in Hudson, rising rents and gentrification and all that stuff, your model could also be inspiring, not just to food shopping, but other, you know, mobile, as you said, other types of activities like knife sharpening. And, you know, but I see in urban areas when I go there are a lot more people also living in campers and cars and stuff because, you know, brick and mortar is out of a lot of people's reach these days. And so for people to remain autonomous as vendors and have, you know, have it on wheels is a really awesome workaround, empowering in a time when it's pretty precarious for a lot of people, right? And, you know, rents and leases are hard to navigate these days, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah,
and you're free from that aspect of it. At least you still have to live under capitalism. I'm sorry, but at least you know that you have a little more autonomy and control since you just have to find places to park.
Yeah,
which is great.
Yeah, I mean, the overhead is not it's there, but it's not mm-hmm. it's not based on someone's whims, so to speak. And to see that right now it's mostly all female powered.
Amazing.
Warms everyone, you know.
I mean,
mother is hearth, is home. So, you know, that is a concept, and it's food and it's nurturing. So when people come on, we do try to push that across too. Like, you know, we're here for you. we're here to keep this moving, but we're here for you, you know. Yeah.
Oh, what were you going to say?
Yeah, slightly tangential, but just the longer that I do this work, working around food access and figuring out these opportunities for change, really noticing, you know, what's at the root cause of that. And when you come down to it, I mean, there's many reasons, but, you know, if a minimum wage is not a living wage, then people are not going to be able to necessarily make the best health choices for themselves based on the food system and how the cost of food currently is structured.
Right.
And so that's what the idea with the food hub is, you know, I've shared out this vision, but ultimately that requires a lot of people to be employed,
mm-hmm.
and to be working living wage jobs,
mm-hmm.
all under the auspices of food access and food availability. But really, you know, if people are making enough to buy food, then it shouldn't really be an issue.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's a whole lot we can unpack with that, and we have about 5 minutes,
yeah.
unfortunately, so that's probably not enough time to do justice, but that's a good thing to meditate on a bit, and also, you know, to know that there are other places in the world where it's better than it is here, but you guys are doing it from the community, for the community, mm-hmm. and to my mind, that's just about the best possible solution to a problem that there can be.
Thanks. Yeah, I love what Cece said. It's like, you know, if you move here, that's fine. But I think if, you know, if you're going to come and be invested in a community effort or see mm-hmm. where you can be helpful or try and really tap into something that might need your support, you know, that's, you know.
Honestly, I do hear from people who have moved here that one of the reasons they chose to settle down here, maybe they were adrift for a while, maybe they got priced out of where they were living, especially down in New York City, a lot of folks got priced out. But a lot of people do specifically say that they want to settle here because they notice that so many people who live here are community-minded, and they do want to contribute to that, not just come here because the rent's cheap, but like actually, no, it's really that people like yourselves are active and contributing on every level. So,
and just a quick note to gentrification, even though it's not the most positive thing that's happened, I find that with gentrification, we have people like Audrey here, Brigham Sheriff here. We have people here who feel like they can change things, not only within themselves, but within the community they're living in. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's nothing wrong with gentrification if you can also apply some of your positives to that environment, you know, not just take advantage of the market, but also to kind of insert your positive, your upbringing, your culture, whatever, you know, to make it better. A lot of the young farmers that are here now are not from here,
mm-hmm.
but they're here making a change, and I find it to be beautiful.
Yeah, I hope that we can all see that people have migrated and immigrated and emigrated for millennia. People are mobile, so are animals, and, you know, it's not a question of who lives where first or for how long or any of that. It's always how you are engaged wherever you find yourself, you know? I personally, myself, I don't own any property and I'm semi-nomadic and I try to always be not a tourist, but a good visitor and participant. And there's many ways, you know, that's a whole way of life, even before agriculture, right? People were nomadic. So that's been kind of pushed away. So, you know, we have these sort of government systems that we have to navigate, but how you choose to be to other people is always the key, right?
Yeah. I mean, my parents and grandparents came here from the former Soviet Union shortly before I was born. And, you know, I grew up in Chicago, but I never felt like that was my home. And so it took me a little while to figure out a place that I connected to. And I'm really happy to be here. But I think like what you're saying, it's we're all in flux and have been over long period of time. And
sometimes for happy reasons, sometimes for sad reasons. Yeah. Some mm-hmm. people are refugees. Other people fall in love with someone from a totally different culture and mm-hmm. go move to be with them. And, you know, there's so many reasons we can move and grow and change and interact. So, you know, hopefully Hudson maybe could be not just a food hub, but a people hub for making community and, you know, I mean, certainly this radio station, I feel like, goes a long way towards helping people do that, right? Yeah. So we got about one more minute. You want to tell us your website and your schedule and all that logistics stuff?
Yeah. Website is rollinggrocer19.org. We are on Instagram at rollinggrocer19, Twitter rgrocer19, and Facebook rgrocer19.
We also have a phone number that's attached to the trailer. So if you have a question about when we'll be open or a product, you can reach us at 518-755-1349. And that phone